come your masters of war. Here that build the big guns, here that build the death planes, here that build all the bombs, here that hide behind walls, here that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy, you play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes, and you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won, you want me to believe, but I see through your eyes and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire, and then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled, fear to bring children into the world, for threatening my baby unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you. That even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I'll follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I'll watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed, and I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 in Hood River. We're Northwest Vets for Peace. In celebration with our 20th year with KBOO, we're going to play an old tape show on Gulf War Syndrome. We interviewed Dr. Charles Jackson of the Veterans Administration Hospital in Tuskegee, Alabama. And Dr. Jackson was reprimanded by the federal government because he diagnosed a single Desert Storm veteran with Gulf War syndrome, and they did not want that to happen. The hosts for that show were Carolyn Mills, John, Rob Holzer, who's a Gulf War I veteran, and his mother, Mary Severs. It was an old tape, 20-year-old tape, so there was a lot of problems with it. But Kathleen Stevenson edited it for us and worked on it and got it pretty good. She did a really great job. The original tape, when we taped it, Chris Hagen was the guy who was kind of our guy, and he cut and pasted, or whatever they call it, to put the show together way back in the early 90s. And so that song was Bob Dylan, Masters of Death, which is a very good show. And I think that we're going to go ahead and start the show. Are you ready to start? Okay, we're going to go ahead and start. This is Dr. Charles Jackson on Gulf War Syndrome from the early 1990s. Okay, thanks.
So what kind of testing are you doing now?
Well, let me explain why we changed the protocol. People that were coming to us were complaining of things like diarrhea and abdominal pains and skin rashes, a lot of fatigue, coughing, shortness of breath, and joint pains. And the particular protocol that we had initiated didn't do several things. It did not look at the diseases that were, we use the phrase, endemic diseases in the area, like hepatitis or cholera or typhoid. It didn't address those things. It didn't address the particular complaints that people were having, and so that's what we did. We changed our testing. A number of people complained of dead animals, and we know there are diseases associated with animals.
I understand. Well, I have a copy of a letter Senator Riegel sent to the Secretary of Defense and Veterans Affairs and to...
Okay, you do have that copy?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And in that, he's requesting that the oath of secrecy be rescinded.
Uh-huh.
I assume so that people can say what happened to him, where they were, and
right. Get
all the information out. So you think that'll be a major help in diagnosis and so on?
Yes, it should be a major help. The reason I say that is medicine is, in a sense, antiquated. It's very important in medicine to have a good history, and by that I mean you can see a person who comes in with certain complaints and problems. They could be having seizures, they could be having diarrhea, whatever, but it's very important to examine the person. But the problem is so many symptoms, say diarrhea, for instance, can be caused by hundreds of different things, but it's important to know, for instance, that the person had been spraying insecticides 30 minutes prior to their getting ill. And without knowing that veterans were exposed to chemicals or pesticides or any kind of toxic agents in the Gulf, you lose a significant part of your investigation because you're looking for things which you normally expect, like I said, the endemic diseases, hepatitis and typhoid and cholera, things that are in the medical textbook, basically. And when you don't come up with those, you're left scratching your head. So it's significantly important that you have appropriate history because that allows you to go and do the appropriate test.
And so you feel that these veterans coming in, because of their oath, were really reluctant to give you the kind of...
There's no question about it. The significant history in this particular case is, for instance, as an example, the 2nd Marine Division, the spearhead of the 2nd Marine Division that went into Kuwait, went across landmines, mines exploded. The FOX units, which were the chemical detection units of the military, their alarms went off. Every indication, including blisters on the Marines and coughing and fumes, every indication was there that they had been contaminated by chemicals. But because of secrecy, because of a whole lot of other things, nobody talked about this for the first 2 years. But in retrospect, we know that Marines were in areas where there was significant information to say, yes, there was chemical contamination. So that's important. That's very important.
Yeah, one of the questions in regards to now that you're learning about the
exposure to the chemicals. And I have a question. I would think that being mustard gas was used back in World War One, and we've had a lot of nuclear bombs and testing from that, that once you have the information as far as why these ailments are showing up, do you have a lot of research to go and look at from the studies done in the past to help give you guidelines on how to treat and further study these ailments?
No, we don't. Problem here is we're also dealing with another type of agent, which is commonly called nerve gas. A little more scientific name is organophosphorus compounds, which didn't even exist in the First World War. These were developed in the Second World War. Fortunately, they were never used as far as we know, but we know that these nerve gas agents were used in the war between Iran and Iraq from 80 until 88, but I guess really they weren't introduced, to the best of my information, until 84. But they were used frequently from 84 until 88 when they had their peace treaty or cessation of hostilities. And so this is a new element. So we do not have a lot of information on what happens to people when they are victims of the toxic effects of nerve gas agents and treatment. Does that help your question?
Yes, it does. And were we not aware that these things would possibly be used if we knew that we were going into this war and back in 84 and 88 they were in fact used in this area? I mean, is this like such new information that we're totally unprepared to deal with it as well?
No, to the best of my memory, I think there was a lot of publicity prior to the Gulf War, that actual January date of beginning of the air war. I think there was a lot of publicity about the fact that we knew that they had gas and biological agents. I think the DOD did make, in my mind, I have no criticism of the preparations the DOD made. We knew that they had tried to equip almost every individual with a complete chemical suit. We knew that they had given vaccinations to cover anthrax and plague, which were biological agents which they knew that the Iraqis had. So I don't feel that we did not know that they had these agents and that they had used them in the past, and there was great fear and concern that they would use them on our troops. If you remember, the estimates of the deaths and the casualties were 15,000 deaths and 30,000 casualties from this war. This was prior to the initiation of hostilities. I think that they told American people, this is not going to be an easy thing. It might be a fast war. We're trying to do it very quickly and regain Kuwait, but we might have to take a lot of losses. And I think, personally, the American people knew that and accepted that.
Mm-hmm. That, I guess, was not quite my question. I agree with you on that. It was, my question is, how was the VA not prepared to deal with the veterans when they came back after being exposed to these things when, in fact, they knew that this would probably happen?
The secrecy?
Being on the committee here at this hospital we had a very elaborate system set up during the war for transferring patients out, transferring into private hospitals, etc. I can say that we did, even in the VA system, anticipate a lot of casualties. We anticipated having to isolate people. I think the VA had made some preparations for contaminated individuals.
Mm-hmm. But now we really need to, there's a need for a lot more research and study then on what the short-term and long-term effects will be from these chemicals, because they haven't been researched extensively in
right.
the past.
We okay. haven't had an opportunity to research, because it's been over 70 years since the United States has been in a war where chemical agents were used.
I have a question related to, were you done, Mary?
Yes, thank you.
Related to altering genes. You know, our local paper here reported on a doctor who now lives and works in Portland, a Dr. Les Kiso. And early in 91, in February of 91, as a Navy doctor, he went over to Saudi Arabia and set up apparatus that was specifically designed to look for normally harmless bacteria like E. coli that had been genetically altered to manufacture well, actually, it can be genetically altered to manufacture all kinds of things, but according to the paper, they were specifically looking for botulism toxin. And I assume that we knew, since we'd sold them some of these substances, that they might have them. Now, it's my understanding, I've just been sort of scanning the literature on this, that a gas mask won't necessarily protect you from a bacterial agent, that I assume the screen isn't fine enough. So is it possible that some people were exposed to this kind of thing? And if so, I assume you'd be inhaling it rather than ingesting it. What would that do? How would that affect the soldiers? Do you think that that's a possibility?
It's a logical possibility, considering the fact that we knew they had these agents. We don't have any reason to believe right now that bacterial agents were used. You have several problems with bacterial agents. One, you have to keep them alive. Two, you have to have a mode of transporting them. Bacterial agents generally produce certain pretty well-defined problems, medical problems. The medical profession, just in general, is pretty familiar with the effects of most bacterial agents, I would say. So, and then plus the fact that anticipating bacterial agents, this is the reason that our soldiers were given the plague vaccine, meningococcal vaccine for meningitis, they were given anthrax vaccine over there, they were given a DPT for botulism, etc. I think that the general things that we thought they had, I think that we had covered our troops for them.
So you really think that a main cause, at any rate, it would be chemical exposure to?
At this point, we feel that at least the people here at Tuskegee that are working with me, we think that the chemicals are probably the predominant thing, and the mode of transport of the chemicals were mines, the fact that the area was contaminated, the bombing of chemical plants. There are a whole host of ways that people could have gotten contaminated with chemicals. The fact that they had used chemicals in fighting in those areas prior, and the area was contaminated. There are a lot of possible ways that our troops could have gotten contaminated. We have not excluded biological agents altogether, such as toxins and things like that. The reason is that some things which are not easily explained by chemical agents, but I think the main thing is that our soldiers were contaminated with toxins, chemical toxins, either pesticides or pesticide plants exploding, or chemical agents because of the bombing of plants in Iraq. That's our main thinking now, that there was contamination in the theater with chemical agents, organophosphorus agents. Now, you know, who you talk to can say, well, you know, they were really pesticides, they weren't nerve gas agents, fine. Well, I'm not going to quibble that point. The point is, they're the same type compound, and that's probably what's causing a lot of people, I'm talking about thousands of people, that have problems such as problems sleeping, disorientation, memory problems, twitching, diarrhea, and those kinds of symptoms.
This is Mary again. I had a question. You were talking at the beginning about changing your protocol back when you found that the original protocol wasn't effective enough for looking into these things. Is that new protocol and the testing you're doing, has that spread across the country to the other VA hospitals?
No, it has not.
Okay. What should the veterans do to make sure they're being tested for the things that you've already researched on and that will be helpful in finding out what's going on in their VA hospitals?
It's probably related to going to the VAs, talking to the chief of staff or administration, getting the tests, that other tests done, and writing letters to the congressman, etc. It's a big uphill battle, and I think that's really important. This whole system has to be changed. The compensation mechanism, everything about how we look at veterans has to be changed because of this war.
Are there other doctors in other parts of the country doing things like you are, as far as, you know, really studying these issues, that we can start getting information from different areas in order to really direct a good program in our areas?
There are a couple of people that I know offhand, there may be others, besides what CA Central Office is doing, having the National Academy of Science and setting up their special Blue Ribbon panels, et cetera, et cetera. There's some doctors in particular, one group, Axelrod and Milner in Allen Park, Michigan, who are publishing an article in the JAMA next month, month after. And they had a whole group of people that went, I think they were an MP group, who went to the Gulf, and when they came back, they were having a lot of health problems, and they've been testing them for a year or two, and they're coming out with a high prevalence of mononucleosis and another virus called CMV virus, cytomegalic virus. Dr. Shavitz, who's in Northampton, VA, feels very strongly, has been doing a lot of work with veterans. Her thesis is that multiple chemical sensitivity is a significant element of the problems that the veterans are having. And I certainly agree with what she's saying, because the whole place was just contaminated. And for months, these soldiers were breathing oil well fire fumes. I mean, in the middle of the day, they were walking around with flashlights because it was so polluted and the sky was black. So there are a lot of reasons why people would be ill.
You're listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland. This is an interview we did with Dr. Charles Jackson of the Veterans Hospital in Tuskegee, Alabama, back in the early 90s. Now we'll get back to hearing what he has to say. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Tammy. Okay, and we're going to go back in just a second here, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7. This tape, we have other tapes that we're going to edit and show and play throughout the year of some of the really early shows that we did back in the 90s, early 90s, and some of them. And one that we're going to work on next, I believe, is going to be Women in War, that we did back probably in 93, maybe 92. And we're ready now. We're going to go back to the show. Thanks a lot.
Sensitivity is a significant element of the problems that the veterans are having. And I certainly agree with what she's saying, because the whole place was just contaminated. And for months, these soldiers were breathing oil well fire fumes. I mean, in the middle of the day, they were walking around with flashlights because it was so polluted and the sky was black. So there are a lot of reasons why people would be ill.
Could you possibly give us some specific tests that the veterans might request, either from the VA doctors or their private physicians, that might help them take a look if they're coming in with specific ailments, tests that you have found?
Surely. Hepatitis A and B and C are pretty important. What we call a serum immunoelectrophoresis, that's very important. That helps you get an idea about the immune system. Sedimentation rate. Those are the three most helpful tests that we found, which we added on, and we got unexpected results with that.
In regards to the exposure to the heavy smoke from the oil fields, any testing particularly that they should look for?
Well, in relation to the oil fires, et cetera, and these are related to multiple chemical sensitivity diagnosis, basically those are going to be immune studies done by an immunology laboratory, and they're pretty expensive. But what you're looking for are antibodies to things like benzene and other basic chemicals that are the product of the oil well fires. And we found people who are sensitive and have antibodies to these things, and they support the diagnosis of multiple chemical sensitivity. In a nutshell, I guess I would say that you're going to find that different people have different problems, and that's part of this whole thing, to figure out whether it's multiple chemical sensitivity, whether it's because you've been exposed to chemical agents, whether it's because your hepatitis tested positive. A lot of different problems that people are coming back with, and that's part of the medical work of trying to figure out what problem is bothering this particular veteran.
Another one that's come up recently that I've been aware of more is the problems from the DU shells, the uranium shells. Any specific test or ailments that the veterans should be paying attention to?
One of the reasons they used depleted uranium was that when it pierces the armor of a tank, the diesel fumes from the gas, the the tank when the bullet would cause the fumes to ignite, and so the occupants of the tank were incinerated by the diesel fumes exploding and catching on fire. So that was one of another reason that they used depleted uranium. The side effect of using depleted uranium is that when it does pierce armor, it does fragment. And in the process of fragmenting, you do get these radioactive particles which are spread over. And from what I can understand from reliable sources, some tanks had to be buried over there because there was so much radioactivity from the fragments of depleted uranium.
So are you doing testing then of the veterans for any type of radiation?
No, we don't.
Would that be advisable, perhaps, at least in some cases?
I don't, just my personal opinion, I don't think so. The people who need to be more concerned about that, I would think, are people who were hit by friendly fire, because these are the people who were hit by our own rounds of depleted uranium. Now, they would have a greater chance of having radioactive material in them or exposure to radioactivity. I would think that ordinarily, the ordinary soldier that was over there probably wasn't exposed to depleted uranium anyway.
Is that a difficult thing to test for and or a costly thing to test for?
Well, I guess you have to have a Geiger counter, but I don't know that anybody's doing that. I think that, to the best of my information, the people that were hit by friendly fire are being followed for the effects of radiation.
Dr. Jackson, this is Rob. I was a Persian Gulf veteran. My question on that is, I entered vehicles that had been blown up by our own fire. Should I be concerned at all on that fact?
I don't know the extent of it. You'd have to go to the VA and get checked out. I don't know how worried you should be about that. I really don't. I think I would be concerned, but like I said, you would have to get tested, see if, you know, you were exposed to more radiation than anybody else. But we haven't been looking into that at all, so I really don't have any.
Because I understand that group you were just talking about.
A group of MP people in Allen Park, Michigan. They had the mono and the cytomegalic virus. Is that the group you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. My understanding from the two doctors is the significant part of their history is that they were exposed to a lot of Iraqi prisoners. And at this point, they're speculating that whatever was going on, they might have spread something to them or been exposed to whatever the Iraqis had been exposed to. So I think that they are feeling that, no, we're not talking about radiation, we're probably talking about some type of contamination.
One question I had was, in these tests that might be good for the veterans to have done if they were exposed to certain things, you are talking about them being very costly in some instances. Are the veterans going to be able to go to the VA hospitals and have coverage for these types of tests?
At this point, I really don't know. The last that I understood was that veterans could be treated. Most VAs don't do multiple chemical sensitivity tests anyway. These are probably going to be private referral labs, and that's why it's so expensive. I don't know if a lot of veterans are going to be able to get that particular test done.
Okay, would you repeat that? What kind of test again was that, Dr. Jackson?
Immunologic studies for antibodies against different chemicals to see what sensitivities you developed.
So it sounds like, you know, one of the issues that the veterans are going to really be dealing with is being able to afford getting care for the things they were exposed to in the Gulf War, that this may be a real problem for many of them.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying, but I think a better route to go is for the veterans to get together and to get the Veterans Administration to do the appropriate testing.
And do you have some other, perhaps, suggestions that might be helpful for the veterans who are listening to us today?
I think that there are several congressmen and senators who are in the forefront of fighting this battle with the military on trying to find out what happened in the Gulf. Any individuals in your area who feel that they were exposed and have a good history, you know, they are reliable. The testing, the equipment, everything read that they were exposed to chemicals, or they're very, very ill and didn't have problems prior. I think these individuals should write these particular congressmen, especially if they have information which strongly suggests that there was chemical agent contamination over there.
What about the veteran that at this time doesn't have any symptoms, is there still a possibility of delayed effects? And then I have a follow-up to that one.
I would say, just to be safe, the answer is yes, because like I said, we don't know really what happened. We really don't know the effects of these things. And what makes it difficult is we're not talking about high dosage levels of chemical agents. We're talking about low dose levels. So there's not a whole lot of information on what are the long-term effects of low dose exposure to organophosphorus compounds.
Okay, thank you. And my follow-up then to that also is an area that we haven't covered or talked about, and that's in the area of the family.
Mm-hmm.
What about the wives and perhaps babies that haven't been born yet, the possible effects on those and things that they should be watching for or concerned about or be taking note of?
Well, in our area and from my contacts with veterans throughout the country, there are a number of people that there are enough people who have complaints about problems in their spouses and their children to be concerned. As it is now, the VA has no way of treating or even monitoring what's going on with the families. We have contacted CDC in this process of this investigation.
CDC is what?
The Communicable Disease Control Center in Atlanta.
Thank you.
And they have been monitoring, and when asked, they have gone into areas where, for instance, there have been supposedly high problems with miscarriages or birth defects in children. And I know of at least one instance where this was done within the last couple of months. As it is now, the VA really isn't including families into its coverage. So in that sense, the investigation is going to be segmented in that the families will be looked at by the CDC, but the veteran himself or herself will be looked at by the VA. But as it is now, that's about the best we can do.
I have a question also in regards to the uniforms and different articles that the veterans brought back that were possibly in the front lines and exposed to a lot of the chemicals and different agents over there. Should there be any concern about leaving these materials and articles in their homes?
I don't know. That's a very good question, but we don't have any good information on that at all. I can't help you with that. We just don't know. This is all brand new territory for the United States.
Another question, in your research that you have done so far, what are the particular ailments that are showing up as far as the more severe things that you're seeing with some of the veterans?
Let's see. In our statistics on our first 180 people, approximately 15% had diarrhea off and on that was really a problem since the Gulf, and they didn't have these symptoms at all prior. About the same percentage of people were having unusual fatigue that they didn't have prior to that. I think about 10% of the people had unusual skin rashes that they didn't have, joint pains, memory problems, significant memory problems, forgetting a lot, being confused, twitching at night, problems sleeping, nightmares, down to maybe 3%, 4%, 5%. In terms of abnormal laboratory tests, I guess the highest percentage was those people that had positive hepatitis tests, which ended up being about 7% out of the 180. And then 4% had elevations in their immunoglobulins, which basically helps fight infection. So we knew there was something going on. The body was trying to fight something, but we weren't able to figure out what the body was trying to fight. And I guess those are the main thing. One other comment. The degree that people are having these particular problems ranges, not in our area, but we have been contacting people in other parts of the country who have undiagnosed neurological diseases where they can't walk, they can barely talk, and they're almost vegetable. People on respirators who are in Gulf. That's one extreme. And then the other extreme is somebody says, well, you know, I have trouble at my job. I have to write down everything. I didn't have to do that 3-4 years ago. That's the degree we're talking about. There are some extreme cases where people, like, for instance, college students have to drop out of college. They can no longer even find their way around the college campus to go to their classes.
Would you say this is really a study that is just beginning as far as becoming aware of what's happening to the vets, and would you recommend that the vets, what can they expect from going and getting on the registry at the VA hospital? What can they expect, and would you advise them to do that?
Yes. Unfortunately, this is really kind of starting. My own personal thinking is that we should have been at this point that we are now 2 years ago if we had known the fact that there were a lot of toxins in the area. It's taken us 2 years to find out that there were toxins, and that's my real main criticism, I think. We should have known that these things were going on. But that isn't generally held, that the theater was contaminated. The congressmen are still fighting and trying to get the information. Yes, I think that people should go and get on the registry, because this is the only way the VA has, besides putting in a claim for compensation and pension, of finding out which people have problems and the degree of their problems.
Do you see these problems as something progressive, that the VA may in fact be able to slow down or stop or cure or at least treat?
Well, I guess to answer that, you know, and this is just my own personal opinion, I'm not representing the VA at all, I think that a couple of other things have got to happen before I really can answer that question. One is, and the congressmen are trying, they had hearings last Tuesday and Wednesday, and I know they will continue to try. What Congress really wants is to get verification from DOD. Yes, there were chemical agents in the theater. Yes, there were toxins in the theater. Once you get this statement, or once Congress is able to prove it one way or the other, either by declassifying information or having people come forward who are no longer bound to secrecy, once you have that history, and I want to stress that again, once you know that history, then you can go ahead and start experimental protocols and treating people. Now, going back to more specific treatment, if DOD or Congress finally says, yes, there's significant information to say that the theater was contaminated with pesticides, nerve gas agents, whatever you want to call it, if we can get that statement, then what we're going to see is, okay, how do we treat people who've been exposed to pesticides? Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Okay. But see, the treatment for people who are exposed to pesticides is not that safe. You've got to go out on your line and experiment and see which ones work better. As an example, I was telling you about, I know one F-15 pilot, and he spent 20 years in the Air Force. He did bombings over in Kuwait and never been sick a day in his life. He retired within maybe 6 months after getting out of the service, and within, say, 6-7 months after that, he was almost a complete vegetable. In order to even begin to do something for this particular individual, you've got to do things for which there's no protocol for. There's nothing in the literature which says this is what you do for this particular person with this kind of problem. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're saying that you literally have to experiment on the people who are affected.
We've never been this route before. This is something entirely new. Everything is experimental. The VA has to completely change to cope with these thousands and thousands of people who are ill.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hard battle.
And the other thing that you're saying is that, boy, the veterans really need to get together and apply all the pressure.
Yes.
The sooner the better.
Yes, because, see, the reason that Congressman Browder, Senator Shelby, Congressman Evans, Congressman Kennedy, Senator Rangel, the primary reason these individuals are in the forefront is their constituencies is having problems. They can't get reelected unless their constituency is satisfied with what they're doing. Georgia and Alabama basically had the highest percentage of people to go to the Gulf out of the reserve.
Uh-huh.
That's the reason that Shelby, Matt Collins, Browder from Alabama, that's the main reason these people are pushing the investigation and getting at the truth, because their constituency is saying, listen, there is something wrong. There's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with the story we're getting out of Washington, the DOD. It doesn't add up. The things happen over there that they're not talking about. So the veterans really have to use their political and constitutional rights.
Do you have some numbers, one of the number of people that were affected, both of the veterans and perhaps the ones that are still on active duty, And the second part of that is, the first part would be illness.
Okay.
And the second part would be, do we know how many deaths have been affected or there have been from this Gulf syndrome?
I think we have maybe 10,000, 12,000 people on the registry now, and half of those people are having symptoms which existed since the Gulf. So that's 5,000 people who are symptomatic, and I said there's a whole range of people with problems from very severe to minor inconveniences. The problem is with active duty people. A lot of people have been discharged from the service. The DOD hasn't been talking about it at all. And I've talked to them. A lot of active duty people are afraid to even go to be seen at sick call because they're afraid of getting put out of the service. That's a real problem. They have no protection.
How could we address that?
I don't know. The DOD is very, very difficult to work with. You know, they have their own system set up. Basically, I guess the bottom line is still, there are only two things that the DOD responds to. The President, the Secretary of Defense is one element, and that's Congress. And those are the only two ways you have of getting at the DOD and getting them to make changes.
You're listening to Veterans Voice radio show on KBOO 90.7 FM, and this is an interview we did back in the early 90s with Dr. Charles Jackson of the Veterans Hospital in Tuskegee, Alabama, and he's talking a lot about the illnesses which is still affecting these folks and their children, and nothing's really changed much about it, but we thought it was important with the amount of people still in the Gulf and the amount of people still with these illnesses. So we're getting ready. We're going to go back to the show now and hear the rest of it. So, Tammy, can we start the show again? Okay, thanks.
And I think perhaps this is a real good time, Dr. Jackson, to make sure that everyone understands that the VA is not the Department of Defense, is not the military, is totally separate. Am I correct on that?
That's right. It's totally separate. And this is one of the reasons that even the VA, at least myself, I don't know about the people in central office, but I presume them too, this is one of the reasons we've been in the dark. You know, we haven't known what we were looking for 2 years because we didn't get any information. And I think this is important to know that there are a lot of people high up in the VA who are saying, and listen, we're suspicious of the story that the DOD is telling us. This man has an opinion. He might be right, he might be wrong, but we're not going to push him up.
You know that only one patient so far has been diagnosed as actually having the Persian Gulf Syndrome?
Yes.
I
guess so, yes, and diagnosed as having been exposed to chemical and biological agents. Yes, that's true as far as I know.
In thinking of the Gulf Syndrome, is there any kind of an outreach program for the Gulf veterans?
Let me put it this way. A lot of VA medical centers are supposed to have outreach programs for the spouses and the veterans. And I'll just have to leave it with that because I don't know what they're doing in your area. But I know we have one. We have psychologists who spend almost their whole time just talking to veterans from the Persian Gulf.
Okay, excellent, because that was a beautiful lead-in to a question that I had. Is there a possibility that there is a combination of psychological and physical? Because I know that a number of us that from the Vietnam era, anytime you're in a real traumatic situation,
mm-hmm.
the mental certainly had a result or effect on us also physically. So is that a possibility, and what should be done to try to perhaps check for that or safeguard against?
I think anybody that's having any kind of problem at all compared to how they were and how their family knows that they were or how they think they were prior to the Gulf, they need to go to the VA. In one of the hearings within the last 2 or 3 weeks, the Susan Mather quoted the fact that when you compare Persian Gulf era veterans with veterans who were in Vietnam era or ordinary veterans who were in the service during Persian Gulf but not servicing in the Gulf, the only significant, statistically significant number that they found or category they found was an increase in PTSD or psychological problems from in the Gulf, problems with sleeping, nightmares, etc. I want to make a comment about that. See, they are categorizing it as PTSD, and we see a number of veterans here who went to the Gulf who are service-connected for PTSD and are being treated for PTSD. But this is my comment about that. It's purely my comment and reflecting what I'm thinking is going on in the Gulf and why I think there's a difference in the PTSD of the two different groups. There was obvious conflict in very severe conditions and a lot of problems. And I think these people really are having what we call PTSD. The people in the Gulf, and this is what's confusing the picture, if you look at the very, very few articles that are published on the long-term effects of low-dose exposure to pesticides, problems sleeping, nightmares, nervous problems, confusion, these are all things which are associated with long-term low-dose exposure to pesticides. So what I'm suggesting, I don't have any proof for it, but what I'm suggesting is the veterans in the Gulf may not be suffering from what we would think is PTSD per se. They might be low-dose, long-term effects of chemical intoxication. Did I make myself clear?
Very clear. Absolutely. Thank you. I think that is very, very important to point that out. We appreciate that. Following up a little bit on something that I mentioned earlier, or was commented about, the active duty people versus the people that are now out. Two aspects. Is there a coordinated effort from the VA and the Gulf Syndrome in what you're doing and the people that are still on active duty? And then I'll follow up a question to that.
No, there is not, because how the Congress mandated the evaluation of the Persian Gulf problem was those people who are active duty are supposed to go to their DOD facilities, and those people who are either were in the reserve and deactivated or no longer on active duty were supposed to go to the VA. So we've had people come over here who wanted to be evaluated for the Persian Gulf Registry. When we found out they were still on active duty, we had to refuse it. So there's absolutely no coordination whatsoever, at least on the local level, between the VA and the DOD. Now, my understanding is that they're supposed to be exchanging information and intercommunicating, you know, at the higher levels, but we don't see active duty people here, and the DOD certainly doesn't see people no longer on active duty.
And you don't exchange information?
Not on a local level, no.
Okay, well, that brings up probably an in-between question, because we have some people that have been put on temporary disability, retirement, or some term similar to that.
Uh-huh.
Those people who are then, for practical purposes, out of the Army but still technically listed as in, can they get on the registry?
Those people are considered veterans.
Okay, so they can get on the registry then.
They can come here, but they are also eligible to go to DOD facilities also, because they still have ID cards. See, a number of veterans have been having problems in that we're under a system of compensation and pension where you basically need a diagnosis in order to get service-connected, as an example. Since these veterans are having problems but no diagnosis, most of them are not getting service-connected. I think maybe, you know, if the oath of secrecy is lifted, then maybe with their request for evaluation from the VA, they could send a copy of that letter of their experience with what they think was exposure to chemical agents or biological agents or whatever toxins they think they are involved in their health problem. They could attach a letter with that to a VA office. So that might help them get compensation.
But it would make sense to ask our local VA if it would help them if the oath of secrecy were lifted. That would be, that's what I meant, that it would make sense to...
There's no question that lifting the oath of secrecy is going to help.
What would be the best questions or approach to address the VA in the care for the veterans at this time?
Maybe I can answer it this way. I think the biggest problem you're going to have is, since nobody was told that this occurred, nobody was looking for biological or chemical agents. And I think for the most part, most VA physicians are not familiar with the effects of chemical agents or organophosphate compounds or pesticides. I can say that a year ago I wasn't either. And I've been with the VA over 10 years. So I guess what the VA the actual individual VA physicians that you're going to be meeting with, they need to start educating themselves on the possible low-dose complications of organophosphorus intoxication.
What's the best thing for the veteran to do himself to educate about these chemicals? Is there certain reading, or what can he do to educate himself better about what's happening to his body?
In major cities, you'll find, in the major universities, you'll find books on chemical agents, pesticide intoxication, things like that. For the most part, you know, this is just not something that this country has to deal with.
What are the particular chemicals that they would be trying to read up on? Can you give us the names that we are aware of at this point?
I guess it would be the pesticides called malathion and prasathion. I'm not sure the spelling. I have to go and spell it. I think basically just go to the library and ask them to look up pesticides. And then you will get the names of the major pesticides, and you can go read up on that, and then that will help you get some understanding of how pesticides work. They work by interfering with the transmission of nerve impulses using the chemical agent acetylcholine. That's why when you use it on people, you call them nerve agents. But it's the same thing that you use on rats and insects.
I've heard a lot about joint pains being a specific ailment that the veterans are experiencing, and then I also heard that it's typical for toxins to settle in, concentrate in the joints. Is that true?
I'm not sure that's true. I think that a lot of people feel that toxins concentrate more in the fatty cells and fatty tissues. To be honest with you, we have absolutely no idea why people are having such a high percentage of complaints related to the joint.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we did, which is why we got a little notoriety, on everybody that came in that first 100, almost everybody, one of the things we did was we did joint tests for arthritis. We did rheumatoid tests, lupus tests, ANA, sedimentation rate. And because we wanted to exclude known, commonly medically accepted reasons for having joint problems. And the interesting thing is I think almost nobody in that whole first 100 had a positive test for arthritis, which in our mind said these people are having joint problems, but the joint problems are not being caused by the kinds of maladies that we see commonly.
Yeah, one of the programs I saw on television just the other night dealt extensively with the DU shells and talked about the radiation concerns there, so it sounds to me like this is probably something new coming forward as well, and there may be other things that are going to show up possibly with the if we see the secrecy thing lifted.
Yes, I think the secrecy thing is crucial to our understanding of what happened, because unfortunately we have to reconstruct the events of that whole war. And I didn't want to do that, and in the beginning we didn't even think we needed to do that, but because we have so many people who are sick with things that don't make any sense, we have to reconstruct now what happened in the war. And I don't know, the gentleman that's was saying that he was a Vietnam veteran. See, one of the problems, and here I know we're kind of stepping on toes, but one of the problems the VA had when it was beginning the Agent Orange investigation was the DOD didn't want to release where they had sprayed Agent Orange.
Right.
Yeah.
And for years, there was this battle between the secretary of the VA and the secretary, well, he wasn't a secretary then, he was head of the VA, and the secretary of defense. We couldn't get the information to decide who got sprayed, what units got sprayed, where the spraying occurred. Because, what's in the DOD is sacrosanct, and they don't want to release anything. Now, we're in that same situation with the Persian Gulf. And, unfortunately, we're going to have to reconstruct. We're going to have to find out what targets you bombed, what was in the targets that you bombed, what were the wind directions when you bombed it? Where did the wind, where could the wind have taken the contamination of the bombing? You know, we've got to find out all of that now to know who was exposed to what. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the DOD ordinarily doesn't want to release this kind of information.
Dr. Jackson, do you know if any of the Fox vehicle reports have been declassified yet?
None of them that I know of.
None of them.
Are you familiar with Bob Wages?
No.
Okay. Bob Wages was in a Fox unit in the Gulf. And see, Bob Wages got into an area where his Fox vehicle detected chemical agents. He was so astonished at this, he didn't know he was in an area, wasn't expecting to be there. He took out his camcorder, his own personal camcorder, and recorded the monitors going off. And he stuck the thing back in his bag and didn't even look at it for 2 years until of all the other hullabaloo on the television. And then he said, oh, I recorded that 2 years ago. Then he went in his closet and dug up the thing. But I'm really trying to answer your question. No, you know, he wasn't released from secrecy, but this was his own private property, and he presented it to the public. Now, you know, I don't know that the DOD has ever commented on it, but that's pretty significant information.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That this particular Fox vehicle was in a contaminated area. And I can tell you definitely that there are other units that their Fox vehicles detected chemical mixed agents. And I know this for a fact, and the information is getting to the congressman that I talked to in affidavit form. There are a lot of units across the theater that detected mixed agents. The key is they all got all clear signals from their commands, or they were rated as false alarms, and nobody did anything about it.
That's what we're hearing all the time, those same two things, that they went off consistently, and they were either told all clear or false alarm or
That's
defective
correct.
Equipment.
That's correct. The last two people I talked to are highly reliable. One was the NBC commander of the whole brigade, the 197th Brigade out of Fort Benning, and another man was in the 197th who was not in the NBC unit, but who was NBC qualified and trained. They both said they did everything they knew and had been taught to verify the fact that the detection devices were accurately recording when the alarms went off. They even changed all the parts of it, and they put it back up again, and they still the alarm still went off. The only conclusion they could draw was that.
Thanks for listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. This is one of our early shows about Gulf War Syndrome, and you'll be able to hear this and some of our newer shows by going to www.kboo.fm/veteransvoice. And we'll be back on Friday, March 18th at 9 a.m. And we want to thank you, the KBOO listeners, because of you, we've been on the radio here at KBOO for 20 years. And we want to thank every one of you that listen to our show and keep us on and support us. So we'll be back next month, March 18th at 9 a.m. And Tammy, take